Greetings, friends. I'm John Haspel. This is a recording of our Tuesday evening Dhamma class at Cross River Meditation Center in Frenchtown, New Jersey, from June 6, 2017. My Dhamma talk and our Sangha discussion is the second of a series on the wisdom of developing restraint. There is a related article on the website. If you find benefit from this talk, please consider a donation. Thank you. Peace. Tonight's the second of a series. I don't know how long a series is going to go. There's four suttas in this one article on the wisdom of restraint. I won't go through the introduction that I read last week, but just to put this in context, our world has developed in a perfect way for the continued establishment of a self-referential ego self. In fact, it really is most of the underlying structure of our society is geared towards continually satisfying an ego self, whatever is behind that, whether it's acquisition of things or power or defending ideals. You know, that's certainly what's driving the news today, isn't it? All these different ideals, and everybody thinks they're right, no matter how wrong they are. Everybody thinks they're right, and again, the society is, or our world is driven by that, and it's almost its own religion that you're doing something wrong if you're not always out trying to get things in some way or another, or establish yourself in some way. And even those of us that aren't completely caught up in a consumer-driven way of life, it's very hard to not be drawn in a very subtle way into these things and get live our lives mostly distracted because we don't understand the value of restraint. You know, and even when you use that word today, it's almost looked at as something that's sacrilegious. That, what do you mean restraint? Aren't I here to do everything and get everything I can? And no, we're not. You know, I don't agree with the Dalai Lama on everything, but he said one thing that always stuck with me is the purpose of time is to awaken, the reason why we're here. And that certainly doesn't mean that we shouldn't enjoy our days and enjoy our associations with people, but when we start creating identities through things that we find make us feel pleasurable or we start clinging to things to aversion, to things that might take away from our pleasure or bring us disappointment, we get stuck in this constant loop of satisfying ourselves and defending an ego self. In the Nagara Sutta, the Buddha talks about that feedback loop of constantly maintaining a self-referential frame of reference in relation to a consciousness that's rooted in ignorance of the Four Noble Truths. So this is the second sutta. The sutta is called the Bhikkhu Vagga. Vagga means a teaching. Bhikkhu is a monk, so this is a teaching to a monk. And the Buddha begins, "Skillful is restraint at the eye, at the ear, at the nose, and at the tongue. Skillful is restraint at the body. Skillful is restraint at speech. Skillful is restraint in thought. Restraint in all experiences is skillful. One restrained in the world is free from confusion, delusion, and disappointment." He's really summarizing his entire teachings in that little segue into this. What he's talking about too, skillful at the sense organs, is to point out that as we're making contact with the outside world, and something starts creating desire or aversion, to practice restraint at that point, because it's at that point that we start getting sucked into the world. We start creating identities over what we like and what we dislike. So it's right at that point when we need a measure of concentration. That's one of the reasons why meditation in the Buddha's Dhamma is primarily for deepening concentration, so that we can be well concentrated enough to even understand that process, the beginning of eye making. "Those who have full control over their hands, their feet, and their tongue are delighted with their understanding." Again, look how practical this is. We have control of our hands. We're not grasping at things. We're not using our mouth to continue to establish a self-referential ego self. We're not constantly grasping and clinging. We're practicing restraint right where it needs to be placed, at ourselves. Those that do this are well established in meditative absorption. So he's relating the outward expression of concentration to the development of a meditation practice. It's an aspect of meditative absorption to be able to practice restraint off our cushions. These are content in solitude, free of entanglements. John, they are called Dhamma practitioners.
Can you say that last sentence again?
I hope so. I don't pay much attention to what I'm saying. So.
The last paragraph before this one.
Those that have full control over their hands, their feet, and their tongue are delighted with their understanding. They are well established in meditative absorption. So again, the Buddha is pointing out that we're taking the concentration. You've heard me talk about the jhanas, and the jhanas are four levels of meditative absorption that the Buddha recognized. And those are often taught as some advanced type of meditation when they're simply ordinary levels of meditation that we all develop if we're developing a meditation practice correctly. So that meditative absorption, that level of concentration that we're able to develop, we take it off our cushion and we use that well-concentrated mind to practice restraint. When you look at the Buddha's teaching and the entirety of his teaching, every single aspect of it is entirely practical. There's nothing esoteric, there's nothing magical or mystical about it. And it all points to developing the refined mindfulness to be at peace with what's occurring without creating any further identities over what is occurring. Is that clear? It is pretty simple. Those who have control over their tongue are moderate in speech. I almost get into something. I'm trying to decide whether I should. In a general way, because I don't want this to get into political speech, look at how we're using social media and look at how little restraint there is, not just for one person, but for many, many people. And they use that in a way that is forcing, I don't even know quite how to say this, it's often used in a way to express an arrogant freedom of speech. Look what I can say. And I can say whatever I want because here's the thing that says I can do whatever I want and say whatever I want. We've created this situation in the world where rather than developing even a measure of restraint, being mindful of what you're saying and the implications of it, what has become more important than that is to say anything that comes to your mind. It's encouraged to be completely unrestrained in what you're saying and what you're doing in many cases. And I'm not saying we all do that, but a lot of people do it, don't they? We've really gotten to an extreme example of a lack of restraint in this world. Those who have control of their tongue are moderate in speech. Unassuming, they explain the Dhamma with integrity and by example. Their words are useful and pleasing. Those that abide in the Dhamma, who delight in the Dhamma, are mindful of the Dhamma. They do not lose the Dhamma. Those free of aversion of what has occurred to them and free of craving for what has occurred to others will be able to attain meditative absorption. Craving for what has occurred to others is just being envious of what others might have. What's that called? The green monster of jealousy and envy. You know, that's what he's referring to here. Able to attain meditative absorption. Those that are calm, even when receiving little, pure in livelihood and determined in their Dhamma practice, their practice is exalted and recognized by the wise. Those with no clinging to thoughts or feelings, free of regret from what is not present, they are true Dhamma practitioners. Those who abide with compassion for all beings and devoted to the Dhamma will achieve unbinding and the bliss of the cessation of all conditioned views. Empty of all conditioned thoughts, free of craving and aversion, they achieve unbinding. And the Buddha describes an awakened human being free of clinging. That's his word. That's what he uses to describe an awakened human being, unbound or released from clinging. Abandon the five lower fetters of self-referential views, of doubt, of belief in rites and rituals, of lust and of ill will. Abandon conceit, restlessness, and ignorance, and abandon the fetters of craving to establish a self in heavenly realms. So common in the Buddhist time, but so common in a lot of modern forms of spirituality, not just modern Buddhism. Cultivate the skillful faculties of conviction, persistence, refined mindfulness, concentration, and wisdom. Overcoming the fetters, one has crossed to the far shore of lasting peace and happiness, the far shore of samsara. You've developed the entire path. Develop concentration through meditation. Do not be heedless and allow your mind to be distracted by sensual pleasure. The world's bait is like a red-hot ball of iron. The world's bait is like a red-hot ball of iron.
Oh.
Look at the visual he's hoping to create in our minds. Remember that. When contact starts coming in and we're delighting in that contact, remember that's like a red-hot ball of iron. It's painful to take it in. Even if it seems pleasurable at first, it takes a while, but that red-hot ball of iron is going to catch fire. Remember the fire discourse and the passions, the fire that rages from those passions for desire, from desire. Those who have the... I'll list the sentence. There is no insight for those that fail to develop concentration. Those who have developed through the Eightfold Path concentration and insight in tandem are close to nibbana, close to awakening. And that's in reference, that's certainly applicable today to the many different types of meditation practice that don't incorporate and focus on deepening concentration. And many meditation practices are more contemplative in nature or analytical. The insight meditation movement is really focused that way, more on analysis of common phenomena rather than deepening concentration. But this was so common during the Buddha's time too that he felt the need to speak to it. Now remember, this is a teaching directly to a monk. He's trying to fine-tune his teachings. Those who abide in solitude, free of worldly entanglements, with a calm mind, who understand the Dhamma through tranquility and insight, again referring to shamatha vipassana meditation, tranquility and insight meditation, in them arises delight that transcends all human delight. Those that see with true insight the rise and fall of all conditioned things and of the five clinging aggregates, they are full of joy and lasting happiness. This is called the deathless state, as there will be no rebirth of confusion, delusion, and disappointment. The task of unbinding has been accomplished. Restraint of the senses, contentment in the Dhamma, and restraint of unskillful behavior, these form the foundation of a well-integrated life. Associate with those who are engaged in the noble search, who have passion for the true Dhamma, who are pure in thought, word, and deed, who are pleasant and refined in their behavior. Full of joy, unbinding will occur. Just as a jasmine creeper sheds its withered flowers, so should you shed greed, aversion, and deluded thinking, the three defilements. Those well composed, calm and pleasant in thought, word, and deed, free of worldly entanglements, can be truly known as serene. Think about it. What the Buddha, he's going through all these things that we might attach ourselves to, and he's getting to the whole point, the most important thing: develop a quality of mind that is serene and unshakable in that serenity. And wouldn't that be incredible if we could just do that, wouldn't it? And we can. That's why the Buddha taught these things. It is by self-understanding that one can scrutinize themselves and restrain themselves. With the sixth sense base well guarded with refined mindfulness, one will always live in peace and happiness. So be your own protector. Be your own refuge. What other refuge could there be? Restrain yourself as a rider restrains his horse. Full of joy and conviction in the Dhamma, the peaceful state is developed and conditioned thinking ends. Those that develop the Dhamma illuminate the entire world as a bright moon free of clouds. Beautiful way to end that sutta, isn't it? Yeah, I think I will. He's teaching this to a monk, but he's teaching it to all of us. And this is one of those things that really gets me. Sometimes it gets me caught up in emotion, but not right now. this is something the Buddha said 2,600 years ago, and look how applicable it is to today, to what's occurring today. Those that develop the Dhamma illuminate the entire world as a bright moon free of clouds. Wow, if there's anything we need today, it's a well-developed Dhamma in each and every person that's able to do it. But this is an individual practice, and it's up to us as individuals to develop this. You know, again, free of the ideology that says that other people or the whole world should be doing this, and avoiding the fact that we should be doing it. This is for us to develop this. And he's teaching this to a single nun, this incredible teaching. And I just realized I got something else I have to add to this book that's never going to get finished, because this is such an important sutta in that last line. I'm glad I didn't put restraint in the title of the book, because I'm not... Anyway. Now that I mention it, the book is getting there. One thing kind of leads to the other, and I realized I needed to put a little bit more focus on mindfulness as the Buddha taught, and that led to another long chapter, but I think it's complete now. So, but maybe I got to figure out a way to put this in there. So that's the second of these four suttas. I think I'll just continue this for the next two Tuesdays and read the other two, because they're just such wonderful teachings, and they really get to the heart of the matter. Before we go around the room, are there any questions related directly to the sutta? Okay, we'll start with Ram. Ram, it's good to see you tonight.
Good to be here again. It's out in the world for the last 2 days, which was interesting because I saw myself behave in an unusual way, which usually not all that outgoing and engaged with people that I don't know. And it was interesting to watch my behavior in that, and how I actually could do something that makes me uncomfortable and still be relatively calm.
At peace with a less than peaceful mind state.
Yep.
Yeah, that's remarkable. It's probably one of those things that's difficult to describe, but could you describe it in a little more detail? It's okay if you can.
Actually, it was... I just found it interesting to watch myself be... being actually not attached to how I was behaving. There was a little part of me that enjoyed how I was holding myself up among people that I would consider experts in the field and all that kind of stuff. There really wasn't much chance for much identity or ego to develop in it, because I was really just watching it. It was actually just kind of fun.
Yeah. There's a fundamental aspect of restraint there, and it's important to recognize an unrestrained mind, when it becomes agitated, will try to change the situation or change the people or even attack the people for creating that agitated mind state, rather than simply being at peace and having the need. The restraint comes from having no need to act on it, to not react, to simply be at peace with that. And that's a fundamental and profound development of the Dhamma, because the Buddha never said that when we develop awakening, full human maturity, that the outside world will cease being dukkha-like, but we'll simply cease reacting to it. Dukkha continues to occur. The causes and conditions that create a lot of stress in the world will continue, but an awakened human being simply is at peace with it, without the need for it to be any different or to try to make it any different. especially when they can't. You know? It doesn't mean you're not compassionate and helpful towards people, but you recognize that the general conditions in the world are unsatisfactory. That's why yesterday you described it. You did it beautifully. Thank you.
One more thing I wanted to add. Thinking and speaking about it now, I realized that last year, around about the same time, I was doing the same thing. And I was, at that point, borderline annoying. And I realized that this time, I wasn't.
Yes.
There was less investment in it.
Yeah.
And, yes, I'm here. I'm one of those people. But it's okay. I don't have to put my 5 cents in.
Yeah.
If I have my 5 cents, here it is.
The less that we have of an ego self invested in something, the less stress we bring into a situation, the less we contribute. I mean, that's really what that last line talks about, too, that we illuminate the world by just simply bringing peace into our own minds. Thank you. Kevin, good to see you.
Good to see you, John. Thank you for the talk, and good to see everybody from the Sangha. And I don't really have much to add tonight. Really appreciate it.
Thanks. I'm glad you're here. It's good to see you. Hello, Matt. Welcome back.
Thanks. Well, my practice is going well, and I just came from a very stressful situation. And I really was able to take refuge in my practice throughout this week. And it just made a world of difference. I was out in Seattle attending a retreat that I didn't even get to start because I got some news about my dad who's dying, and thought that the right thing for me to do would be to go down and be with him and see what was going on. And getting into that situation opened up a whole nother can of worms that was incredibly stressful and uncovered a lot of really difficult family dynamics that have been at play for a long time, and I just, you know, a lot of different things came up. There was a lot of interfamilial problems that came to light and came to the surface, and there's a lot of rage and anger that comes out through the particular family system that is the void that I had to interface with, and I really took refuge in my practice really big things happen because of it. You know, one was being able to be put on full blast with all of this rage and anger and not personalize it and practice restraint as this maelstrom of rage and, you know, was just attempting to completely override my nervous system. I was able to just really not personalize it, and in doing that, it diffused the rager.
Wow.
And that led to some really potent reflections from the people that were involved. And you know, in that sutta, you know, what the Buddha was saying, teaching to that monk or that nun about how when we develop this well concentrated mind in our Dhamma practice, and we really are a light to the world when we come off of our cushion and we're out in there, because at that point, if we have developed that stability of mind, it doesn't matter if you're sitting on the cushion or you're out in your family. It doesn't matter. It's just that stability of mind is available. And when someone's mind is stable and they're able to be that light, boy, it can save the day, man. It can save the world. Mm-hmm. And not the world in the sense of the world, the big world, just in the sense of the world that this room is, you know, that this is our world right here. So it was an extremely stressful week and a half or so, but feeling pretty good. I'm feeling okay, you know, and I feel like there was something stable and illuminated that allowed for the rest of the people that were involved to be at ease. And I'm sorry, I'm so vague with this story, but it's just incredibly personal and just really difficult to talk about.
No, I think we all have the similar things in our family. And you know, what you said is if you don't put your reaction out, they can't hook onto anything and keep going.
Exactly. And you know, so that I just took refuge in the practice, and you know, if I had start reacting and got caught up in the rage, then who knows what would have happened. I would have been in here with casts on my arm. So the wisdom of restraint was in full effect, and I'm just really grateful for that sutta. Thank you,
Matt, for sharing all that. It really is remarkable how you describe you use the word stability, that rooted in meditation but framed by the Eightfold Path, you simply know how to act. And you also point out to why I use the words full human maturity to define or describe what it means to be awakened, because that's what it means. You didn't contribute to a situation that sounds just awful, that would easily get out of control, because you were able to maintain your own control. Yeah, while you were telling me the story, I was thinking about the Buddha's encounter with Angulimala, who was intent on killing the Buddha. But the Buddha was simply mindfully present in the Dhamma and then spoke a few choice words and diffused the situation, just as you did. Good for you, and good for everyone there. That's how it's supposed to work. Thank you. Judy, good to see you. How are you?
Okay. Yeah, I think the restraint thing is it's about time. You know, it's so easy to get caught up in all the angst. And it may not seem like I'm clinging and craving to anything in particular, but I just get caught up in everything that's happening, and I want to see what's happening, and then I may want to post something that's happening, or just keep seeing what's happening, and it's just so distracting.
It feels like you might miss something, doesn't it?
Well, you do miss things because things are happening at such a rapid pace. So, what is the effect of missing something? Well, nothing really. So, I think I'm just going to. I will still look at things, but I think I'm going to set aside, because I like to be informed. I'm going to set aside time to still look at things. And not look at things other times. And just cut down on feeding into the frenzy. I mean, because I like to have, I think sometimes the social media could be really nice where you could have a, learn things and have a good conversation. But people take the anonymity, or the almost anonymity, to be horrid.
Yeah.
So it ruins the whole concept of the thing. So... and what Matt was saying is something that I really need to work on to get at some of the mess that's coming on in my family, you know, that's just been hanging on for years. And if I'm going to be able to work with certain people, I'm going to have to maintain calm in the face of provocation.
Yeah. Thank you. It's unrealistic to expect social media to be any different than it is, because social media is part of the first noble truth, dukkha occurs. There's positive stuff there, and negative stuff, and hurtful stuff, skillful stuff, and unskillful stuff. That's just, again, it's just a reflection of the world. But developing a strategy of restraint to say, you know, I don't need to always be engaged with TV, internet, Facebook, and all the rest of it. Set aside a time, you know, maybe 6 or 7 seconds a day, and then move beyond it.
But even if I set aside longer than that, if I just do it at one point in the day or two points in the day, then it doesn't distract me from the rest
of the
day.
That's right. That's a great strategy of restraint.
So try to do that.
Yeah.
And unlike real life, you can block people on social media.
Oh, I don't have a lot of people in my life on social media, but I take in a lot of
news
through my phone or you know, right. It's not necessarily Facebook per se, but I just, sometimes it is, sometimes it isn't, but it's this immediate gratification machine, or non-gratification machine in some cases.
Yeah.
It's like,
Well, they say that the fact that you can scroll through is actually, they do it that way on purpose. Because you keep going until you find that thing you want.
I keep you engaged. Yeah.
Yeah,
that distraction that you want or feel you need.
If the Buddha were alive today and he was describing clinging, he'd just hold up a cell phone. Because that's where it all comes through that, doesn't it?
they call it the attention economy.
Mm-hmm. And that really the
monetize anatta.
Yeah, and how do you? I mean, if you think about the old,
make the logo for that now.
The old Madison Avenue was about getting eyes on your product, and it's still the same. I mean, but our whole economy now, and even the highest offices in the land are driven by how can I get people to watch what I'm doing and get engaged. Everything, including me.
No,
I mean that really is. And again, getting back to practice restraint. Create a strategy of restraint. You don't have to always be engaged. In fact, the less you're engaged, the better, I think.
And on Saturday, I actually had a very pleasant experience. I've been following this was a nice thing on Facebook. It was called a Facebook page called Driving Miss Norma. It was about a 90-year-old woman who was diagnosed with terminal cancer right after her husband of 70 years died. And her son and daughter-in-law were RVers. They were in their late 50s. They had retired early and lived very simply. And she didn't want any treatment. She said, why don't we take you on the road? And so the first time in his life, he got to know his mother. And she came out of her shell. They spent a year traveling, very simply. And once their story went viral, because she put it on Good News Network and freaked her husband out, they got invitations from all over the country to go see this and stay with us here and be feathered there. And they had an amazing adventure. And but they maintained a simple life. They may not now because it's a book and a movie, but but you know, they chose to do that for a year. And so I came out of that and said, you know what, I'm not going to hire my husband to get another job. This is the year he can spend with his father, because he's also not well. And this is the year my husband can just spend with his father, and they're close, and do what, you know, go to movies, things like that, you know, simple things. But they can do it more frequently. Mm-hmm. And that's it. I'm not going to worry about it.
Yeah, good. Yeah, there's skillful and unskillful applications of all things in the world, you know, including social media. It's just a reflection of the world. So, thank you. Lorna, good to see you.
Thank you. Good to be here. I have associate some of this teaching with grabbing. You know, I do a lot of grabbing at life, which is the opposite of restraint.
It is.
No, I do it. Pulling back from it is very difficult for me. Although I know and I understand there's peace in restraint, but when I'm going about my life, I grab on ideas and grab on this and grab on that. And I can see myself doing it. And I feel the consequences at the end of the day, much more tired and all that sort of stuff. So that's how I look into my practice about restraint. Looking at restraint is better than looking at the grabbing. I'm looking at the grabbing and therefore I'm grabbing. Maybe I should look at restraint more.
No, you're doing it. You first need to develop mindfulness of what you're doing, and that's what you're describing. You know, and then there's a process. You can't let go of something that you don't even know that you're attaching yourself to. You know, you have to recognize a process. Again, that's where concentration.
It's a conditioned mind.
Yes, it's exactly why the Buddha taught an eightfold path and didn't just say go sit and meditate for a while. We need a framework. We need concentration developed in meditation, but then a framework to see what we're attached to, what we're grabbing after, what we're using to continue to establish a self-referential ego personality.
Yeah, and anyway, I have another rather happy tale. Last night that I went to, I had a very pleasant day yesterday, and I seem to be very mindful throughout the day, or throughout the afternoon anyway, not so much in the morning, but definitely in the afternoon. And came my meditation, my regular meditation time, I went to my regular chair where I meditate, and I just wanted to sit in mindfulness before I started meditation. I just wanted to sit, because I knew I could just sit in mindfulness, be quiet and sit in mindfulness. And I just sat in mindfulness before I started meditation, just for the pleasure, nothing else. I wasn't trying to achieve anything. I was just sitting in pleasure. However, when you sit in mindfulness and you're on your meditation chair, you really start meditating. Not as a thought, but it goes that way. Your mind goes that way. So I sort of sat for a couple of minutes in my lovely mindfulness, and I realized that I'd sort of almost started meditating. So I just thought, okay, and it wasn't my appropriate time to meditate, so I just sort of drifted into my meditation. But it wasn't a meditation where I went to the chair, set the timer for 20 minutes or 25 minutes. I think of your words that this is the time to meditate. In other words, like clear everything else out of your mind. this is a time to get onto your breath and think about your breath, and that's sort of what meditation usually starts. You know, I just have to get my mind onto meditation. But this time I just didn't. I was just so in mindfulness that I just drifted into meditation without the "I'm starting meditation."
It was more organic.
It was, yes, it was more of a flow from my regular life to sitting for a couple of minutes, and then going into meditation was a flow, not a thought process behind it.
That's pretty good.
Like
thank you.
Integration and embodiment.
Yeah.
Yeah. The Buddha mentioned it here. The meditative absorption that you've developed on your cushion is now becoming part of your life, and that mindfulness that just naturally came over you is described in some of the literature as the first jhana. That's part of you now. And you're taking the refuge that's developed in your meditation practice into your moment-by-moment life. It's a well-integrated Dhamma practice. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Thank you for sharing. Liz, good to see you tonight.
Good to see you. Good to see everyone. I've been thinking a lot about the skillful use of the Dhamma practice. And when Matt was talking, we work towards not taking the bait, but also of not being. We want to be present. So, with chaos and things happening around us, the skillful use of the Dhamma is still to remain present in that moment. And that's where the real challenge is, especially when things are chaotic, because the tendency is to want to leave the moment, to go somewhere else, to, you know, make it stop, you know. But the skillful use of the Dhamma, and it goes back to the first day of the retreat when we talked about the dependent origination and the feedback loop, that the loop can be interrupted at any time through the skillful practice of the Dhamma. So the first step is the awareness. The second step is the practical application. Mm-hmm. Then it's the embodiment. And then it's the integration into all.
That's it.
So,
beautifully said.
You know, having been with people who have passed, and the experience of being in that moment it's profound. And if you can get through all the outward pain and anxiety and stress and all of those issues that come up, and just be mindful and don't take the bait and don't feed into it, it's really profound.
Yeah, it is.
It's really profound.
Thank you. Yeah, it's profound and it's entirely ordinary too. It's what we're designed to be, is that state of peaceful poise. The whole idea of the refuge. Taking refuge in the Buddha, his Dhamma, and a well-focused Sangha. Lorna described it too pretty well, you both did, and Matt did too, and I think we all did tonight. on our cushions, we start developing that calm and peaceful mind, a well-concentrated mind. As we integrate the Eightfold Path, we're able to take it off our cushions and maintain a measure of peace and calm, a measure of restraint. And as it deepens, then refuge takes place in very specific ways and very generic ways. Our meditation practice becomes a true refuge. It's something we can look to. When the world becomes too chaotic or we're simply just too caught up in it, we know that at least twice a day, and really as often as we choose, we have that refuge. And as that refuge deepens, we also are able to take that into the rest of the world, and we're not so affected by things that occur anymore. You know? We're developing the wisdom of restraint. Thank you. Bonnie, good to see you tonight. How are you?
Good to see you too. I'm good. And I would like, I'm working on that because the butt will always be there to break some of the links of how I have responded because of the karmic stuff that presents itself. And so, you know, in my work life, I can have a stable mind and I can be present and listen and have restraint. In my, when I'm not at work and I am my bodhicitta, and I really wanting to work on being, you know, like I can, you know, I can see it, I have the intention, but somehow something slips up, and, you know, so for me to work on the restraint of speech and to figure out what I need to do so that I don't have to keep responding like I always did, and responding also when we, you know, to break the link of the fabrication that of the old stories. Mm-hmm. So I, you know, I'm not. I my practice is good, but I need a lot more. I'm still working on so that I can have that restraint. And one of the things I wanted to say that I felt like, well, first off, I love the sutta because a lot of the suttas are, this is what will happen, this is what happens when we do, you know, we don't see, we're ignorant, right? This one, he's talking about almost like all the benefits that come from the practice and looking at the Four Noble Truths and the Eightfold Path, right? And it's sort of like, in a way, it's unrestrained. This is what will happen in the restraint of not seeing, or the restraint of not having an intention, or saying whatever you want to say, or you know. I mean, I know people who say, "Oh, I don't have one regret in my life." Well, geez, I don't know that, but because especially if I keep looking to want to change things, but you know. I say this all the time, I said it to somebody today, when the student's ready, the teacher shows up. So I hope that I can be as restrained and present of mind as Matt was with his family. I have a storm coming on the horizon. I see it coming. And now I just feel like it's karmic in the sense that it's got to be because me, it's happening to me all the time, the same thing, but I have a choice to change how I do it, and that's really the rub, because I can see the ego fighting with me, and I can, and sitting more, I think, even more often, or just even if it's for a few minutes, if you're right now, and to try to change the, it's like a merry-go-round that's going really fast, really fast, really fast. Remember when you were kids and then everybody tried, okay, change! And kids would put their feet out to try to get that merry-go-round.
to go back the other way? And that's kind of how it feels like when I'm hi! So, it's, yeah. The view is changing.
Yeah.
Well, it's actually always been there, but I don't know that I've ever realized that to have such clarity about some things. I may not be able to control it or have the restraint that I want, but I know where I want to be. But it almost feels like if I do that, then am I giving up something? Because I know I can't undo what's been done, or and I don't have to keep doing what's been done. And that's teeter totter.
Are you saying if you don't stand up for yourself, so to speak, does restraint equal capitulation or not?
Yeah, no, but there's something that Matt said that I think when you're really seeing clear, just like when I'm at work, I'm really listening, I'm really clear because it's not about me.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I can be mindful, and it's that sometimes you don't have to say anything, or it's the thing that you say that it's the truth. It's not the truth. It's the... Well, maybe it is the truth. I don't know. What is it? It's the thing that's in the room, that's on the table. And you speak to what's really, I think, the core of something. And so if I get myself in the way because of my big ego, or I have to... I started writing... What did I do with it? I don't know what I did. I'm always writing things in my office in between clients, and I write things down and I hide them somewhere myself, and I find them later. But it's about what I need to do in order to do that. And I think it's about... You know, just the presence, and I'm getting lost here. It's that clarity again. it's about being able to, if I can be that calm mind, if I can be stable, because that's, I am an emotional person. I am a very incredibly sensitive person, and so just to be able to be still enough to speak to the truth. I think when you do that, it's really hard for people. It's like somebody comes at you with their dukes up, and you go, I know. Or I want to, it's going to make a difference if you hit me now or not. I don't mean verbally. I mean metaphorically, whatever that might be, but...
Or here's a broom. I don't want you to hurt your hands. Why don't you hit me with the broom?
It's like diffusing it, and that's it. They come fighting, and you're not going to fight them,
mm-hmm.
and or you agree with them in some way. Then mm-hmm. you're right. This is it. It's not a comfortable thing, and then the situation diffuses. So it's sort of like employing that when I don't want to say I have a big mouth, but I speak a lot of times honestly, and sometimes it doesn't come out, in a magnanimous way. So this all sort of, I think there's a piece of defending, feeling like I have to defend myself, but I think the way I can stand up for myself can be different than maybe
mm-hmm.
the way I've done it in the past, which is more like little body as opposed to, being this
Buddha body.
Buddha body! I like that! But does it make sense?
There's a paradox here that the more we practice restraint, the more free we are.
Which is what I was sort of, it's a paradox, right.
Yeah. And that directly affects karma, is the present moment unfolding of past intentional acts moderated by the present level of mindfulness, what we're holding in mind. So, restraint.
And then if we can break a link, it undoes that, but it opens the veil in a way through that.
It moderates the unfolding of karma. Karma, misapplied to say that it's a future determined by past actions. That's not entirely true. Angela Miller was a good proof of that, but everything is proof of that. So whatever we're holding in mind in this moment is going to points to becoming too. We're either going to become further ignorant or become more awakened. That's the choice we have, and that's where restraint leads to great freedom, the freedom of an awakened human being, illumination to the whole world. Thank you all. A few announcements. The Cross River Meditation Center Sangha picnic is July 15th, rain date the 16th. Yeah, the info's on the website, linked in the through the email.
Oh, it's on the website?
Yeah.
July 15th?
Yeah, it's not obvious on the, look in the email for the link, because it's not obvious on the website.
Okay.
Yeah, everybody's invited, family, friends, pets. It's at Morris House. There's a big property where kids and pets can run free and uncontrolled meditation practitioners too. Just across the river, about 10 minutes from here. July 15th, rain date on the 16th. The registration for our next retreat is up. Tracy signed up today from Salt Lake City. She'll be joining us.
Cool.
If you're going, please sign up as soon as you can. It just helps my logistics and the financial responsibilities. I will be putting up a link. I don't know if it matters at all. But the credit card processor, PayPal, said that they can do financing if I want. So I'm going to put that up there if that's helpful to anyone. I have no idea what the terms are. It has nothing to do with me, but if that helps, I thought I'd put it up and see.
They have a credit thing.
They have their own system.
And I have no idea what, it might be 20% or something, but I don't know. But anyway, that'll be there. I hope you can join us on a retreat. It is coming up pretty quick. October is just a few months away. All right, so let's finish with the Buddha's words on metta, and we'll continue this series too next week for another week or two. And just a reminder, because a few people didn't get it, I'm now teaching here on Thursday night. A few people said, "Well, I thought you were still in Clinton," but I'm not. And I do tomorrow during the day at noon. I have my weekly talk, and you can now interact with me on this new platform. And I will be up in Clinton tomorrow night with an introductory talk to it.
Is that platform now open to phones and tablets?
Yes. Okay. It's I haven't used it that way either, but it's supposed to be seamless on anything you can attach, you can connect to the internet with, should work on this. So, and you can interact with me too. So. Which is what I was looking for.
Not while you're driving, please.
Yeah, not when you're driving. So find your relaxed meditative posture and gently close your eyes and gently close your mouth. And again, take a moment to become aware of the sensation of breathing in your body and let that mindfulness of your breath cease any distracting thoughts to the past or to the future or that may have arisen from our talk today. And metta is both an aspiration for those of us developing the Eightfold Path and an expression of a fully awakened, fully mature human being. The Buddha's words on metta. This is what should be done by one who is skilled in goodness and who knows the path of peace. Let them be able and upright, straightforward and gentle in speech, humble and not conceited, contented and easily satisfied. Unburdened with duties and frugal in their ways, peaceful and calm and wise and skillful, not proud or demanding in nature. Let them not do the slightest thing that the wise would later reprove. Wishing, in gladness and in safety, may all beings be at ease. Whatever living beings there may be, whether they are weak or strong, omitting none, the great or the mighty, medium, short or small, the seen and the unseen, those living near and far away, those born and to be born, may all beings be at ease. Let none deceive another or despise any being in any state. Let none through anger or ill will wish harm upon another. Even as a mother protects with her life her child, her only child, so with a boundless heart should one cherish all living beings. radiating kindness over the entire world, spreading upwards to the skies and downwards to the depths, outwards and unbounded, freed from hatred and ill will. Whether standing or walking, seated or lying down, free from drowsiness, one should sustain this recollection. This is said to be the sublime abiding. By not holding to fixed views, the pure-hearted one, having clarity of vision, being freed from all sense desires, is not born again into this world. Thank you all for another wonderful class. Peace. Thank you for listening. Please visit crossrivermeditation.com for guided meditations and instruction, and Dhamma articles, recorded talks, and videos. We rely on donations to support these talks. If you find benefit from these talks, please consider a donation at crossrivermeditation.com. These talks are copyrighted and are distributed under a Creative Commons License 4.0. Please feel free to contact me through crossrivermeditation.com. Peace.